Remembering the life and legacy of Edmund Muskie on the 100th anniversary of his birth.
This is the first legislature for some of you, I assume, as I look at the faces in this room. You are at the beginning of your political careers. When I began my own, I had no suspicion it would lead as far as it has, or that it would consume the years that it has.
That was Edmund Muskie speaking to the Maine legislature in 1981 in a speech marking the end of his political career. Muskie had just stepped down as President Jimmy Carter's Secretary of State. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll look back at Edmund Muskie's remarkable career from a modest childhood to state and national politics as governor, U.S. senator, and presidential candidate. Maine Calling remembers a giant in Maine politics, but first, this news update.
With this look at Maine news, I'm Ed Morin. Republican Governor Paula Paich has submitted four bills that would place some restrictions on those receiving temporary assistance for needy families or TANF benefits in Maine. Under the governor's proposal, TANF benefits could not be used to pay for alcohol, tobacco, lottery tickets, or bail, and could not be used to access TANF benefits out of state. Also, job-ready TANF applicants would have to look for three jobs before receiving benefits. Washington County residents are speaking out against the proposed closure of the Downeast Correctional Facility in Machiasport. Governor LePage announced last month that he wants to close the minimum security state prison, which has about 150 beds. At a public meeting yesterday, area residents worried about the loss of more than 50 jobs, as well as some of the other peripheral benefits of the prison. The University of Maine School of Law has canceled all classes after noon today due to plans by USM students to protest recent faculty cuts in and around the law building, that according to the USM Free Press. A member of President Barack Obama's administration is traveling to Maine to support a Democratic plan to raise the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to $10.10 an hour. And the average retail cost of a gallon of gas in Maine has fallen by a little more than a penny in the past week. GasBuddy.com reports the price at the pump has gone down to an average of $3.61 per gallon in the past week, 10 cents above the national average. Taking a look at the weather, limited sun in the north this afternoon, becoming overcast late, mostly sunny elsewhere, clouding up in the mountains, windy with highs 15 to 27 degrees, clear and frigid tonight with lows minus 22 to 5 above, sunny tomorrow. The sun fades a bit in the afternoon, especially in the west. Highs 25 to 32 degrees. Some snow on Wednesday. Right now, it looks like the biggest impact will be down east. With Maine News and Weather, I'm Ed Morin. Maine Calling Time, 12:08.
From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Edmund Muskie had a remarkable career. He served the people of Maine as governor and then U.S. senator. He served the nation as Secretary of State. He was a candidate for vice president and president. A Democrat who emerged when Republicans controlled state government, he went on to become a champion of the working man and the environment. March 28th, this Friday, would have been Muskie's 100th birthday. Today on Maine Calling, we look back on the life and legacy of the Rumford, Maine native. With me in the studio, Pat Weber. He is director of the Muskie Archives and Special Collections Library at Bates College. Also with me, Jim Witherell. He's the author of Ed Muskie, Made in Maine. We invite you to join our conversation. What do you remember most about Edmund Muskie? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you both for being here today. We've been talking about this program for a long time. It's amazing this date is actually here. And I'd like to start with you, Jim. Your book deals with the first part of Edmund Muskie's life. He came from very modest background, didn't he?
That's right. I was born in Rumford myself, so I can attest firsthand to what it's like growing up there. And either you work in the mill there, which was in business at the time Ed Muskie was born, or you work in one of the little businesses it kind of supports. And it's definitely coming from humble beginnings.
Tell me about Muskie's family. That was not originally the family name, was it, Muskie?
No, originally it was Marshashevsky. And There are several rumors, I guess you'd call it, about how the name got shortened. Some people say it was shortened by the immigration people when his Ed's father came to Ellis Island, or by a town clerk in Rumford. But I found some information that said Ed's father shortened it himself. He just made it up. He was torn between March or Mac and decided on Muskie. In fact, two of Ed's sisters and his brother were originally named Marshashevsky, and he had to legally change the names of all the Marshashevskys to Muskie after he graduated from law school.
Was there any indication when he was a boy or even a teenager that he would go on to such great achievements?
If you go by how studious he was and serious and thoughtful, that's probably the only indication. On the other hand, he was very shy and introverted, probably more introverted than shy. And he would take books out of the Rumford Library, 8 or 10, the maximum he was allowed once he reached the age where he could take books out by himself, and lug them up Falls Hill to the family home in the Virginia section and just read. He would sit by the kitchen sink while his mother did dishes and just stare out the window. His mother would ask him what he was looking at, and he would just shake his head.
Pat Weber, I'd like to bring you into the conversation. I want to fast forward to Edmund Muskie's election as governor of Maine. I understand from looking at old documentaries and reading about Edmund Muskie that Maine was so solidly Republican then that no one would have dreamed that a Democrat would have won the governorship. What happened? How did he win?
Well, Maine was certainly a Republican state. The joke went at the time that you could fit all the Democrats in Maine in a phone booth. And supposedly after he won, someone gave Muskie a phone booth. So we get questions occasionally in the archives. Where's the phone booth? Do you still have that? And no, we don't have the phone booth, if there ever was one. Maine had been a Republican state forever. I think it came out after he was elected that he was the first Democratic senator elected by popular vote in Maine, and he was the first governor, Democratic governor, I think, since Garcelon, wasn't he?
The second Democratic governor since World War I,
right?
After Bran was the last one,
right.
In the '20s or thirties,
right? But I think a lot of people were at the time were just ready for change. You know, you could say that the Republican Party had become so entrenched, maybe that it was maybe paying its attention more to its own voice than it was to the voice of the people in Maine. And I think, Muskie had done a lot of work, sort of a lot of work on the ground through the Office of Price Stabilization after the war. So I think he knew a lot of people. He knew his way around the state. And that first campaign, they did a lot of driving around the state and just a lot of handshaking and going to a lot of places maybe that Democrats had never gone before.
One thing you found out, Jim, is that being elected governor may have helped him financially in ways that people might not have realized at the time.
Oh, that's right. Just about a year before he was elected governor, in a very surprising outcome, he had fallen down the stairs into the stairwell and broken his back in 1953. I'm not sure of the month now. But he was pretty heavily in debt to the Sisters Hospital in Waterville. Like $5,000, and in 1953, that's real money. So he mentioned himself, if I hadn't been elected governor, I would have been in deep trouble financially.
Hmm. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We're talking about Edmund Muskie, and we're talking about his years as governor. Pat Weber, what was his greatest achievement? What was he known for as governor of Maine?
His greatest achievement as governor. Jim, do you think you could speak to that more since you talk about his time as governor in Maine?
I think what springs to mind is his ability to reach across the aisle. It's from his debating experience at Stevens High School and at Bates. He learned to reason out, think through all the problems and decide what was important to get. And he would he had this ability to convince the other party that to very, very frequently, of course, not all the time, but very frequently to go along with him, or he'd get concessions. He knew how to get what he needed. And I think I'm struck by how many parallels there are between back then and today that we really need to more conversation, people reaching across the aisle and working together instead of this gridlock if one party's for something, the other one's against it.
And he was working with a Republican
legislature. That's right. And as senator, I know that he was most proud of the Clean Air Act.
Right.
Right now we know many politicians who self-identify as environmentalists, but he was really one of the first on the national stage, wasn't he, Pat?
Right. When he became a senator, he was put on the Public Works Committee, not by choice, and then very quickly became the chair of the newly created, I think it was called the Pollution Standards Subcommittee, and really started working on these environmental issues and was the father of the Clean Air and the Clean Water Acts, and I guess by extension sort of the father of even the EPA and the Superfund after that. He may not have self-identified as an environmentalist. I think there was an early biography of him called The Reluctant Environmentalist. He even was accused at the time of being too close to business. Ralph Nader's group came out strongly against him after the Clean Air Act came out, saying that he was still too cozy with business interests in Maine and across the country. But I think he was the father of what we can consider the modern environmental movement, I believe, in that he was trying to get, as Jim would say, as his time as governor, with working across the aisle. He wasn't a hardliner, and he realized that for the environmental issues to make headway, they were going to have to work with business interests. They were going to have to work with people. They couldn't just go in and say, this is the way things are going to be, and it doesn't matter if everyone's going to lose jobs. That certainly wasn't the way he wanted to operate.
Let's talk about Muskie as a vice presidential and presidential candidate. Of course, one of the most famous and important parts of Ed Muskie's career and unfortunate parts is the whole letter, and the speech outside the Manchester Union Leader in Manchester. And I'd like to have you tell that story and not tell it myself. And what is sort of, I want to look back at what history's assessment of what happened that day is now that we're, a few decades out.
So the Manchester Union Leader printed the letter, the so-called Canuck letter.
Oh, and you know what? I need to back up in just a minute and put people in the place. At this point, Edmund Muskie was considered a leading candidate. People assumed correctly that he
yes.
would be the Democratic nominee for president,
yes.
and it's about the time of the New Hampshire primaries. Okay,
right.
I've set you up for that
right.
better now.
So to back up, he'd been the vice presidential candidate in 68. In 70, he had given, for the midterm elections, he had given the Democratic response on election night, and he came across very well. Nixon apparently came across, he was in a noisy, I think, airplane hangar, and he came across as kind of almost radical and angry. And Muskie had this very, I think he was in a house in Cape Elizabeth, and came across as very reasoned and very measured. And so by 72, he was clearly the front runner. And sort of fell afoul of Nixon's dirty tricks campaigns, of which one of those was the Canuck letter, where someone sent an anonymous letter to the Manchester Union Leader saying that Muskie had used this derogatory term to describe French Canadians in Maine. And Muskie got fired up. Muskie had a very fiery temper. And he went down to the steps of the Manchester Union Leader and called out the editor of the paper. And it was a sleety, snowy day. Should also say that the paper had also said some things about Muskie's wife, Jane, that she had a drinking problem, that she was unstable. And Muskie went down there and had some choice words for the editor. And like you said, it was a snowy day. He probably got snow and sleet on his face. He later claimed that he was just wiping some slush off his face. I think that he probably did get a little emotional, a little teary, kind of like you can get when you get fired up about something. And people, unfortunately, that sort of did his campaign in. People
Isn't saw it that. Interesting that in 1972 that was perceived of
as weakness,
weakness yeah. and now someone would say he's passionate, he cares
right.
about his wife, and he
right.
cares about the people of his state. It's so interesting how a generation can change things.
And Madeleine Albright, who worked for him briefly in the 70s, said, you know, if a politician, that happened to a politician today and went and did that, his polls would go up. But back then, that's not what people wanted to see. And so he was seen sort of as... Probably some people saw it as weakness and other people saw it as instability, and he could be pushed around too easily.
I want to read the first line of the New York Times obituary, not even the whole thing. It just says, Edmund S. Muskie, the charming, if often volatile Democrat from Maine. Would Jim Witherell, is that an accurate summation, the charming, if often volatile Democrat from Maine?
Yes, on both counts. Very eloquent, very thoughtful. Very well spoken, but he had a temper. The best thing it's not covered in my book because my book just covers through his terms as governor. But once he got to Washington, there was a joke floating around the Senate that said, "I asked Muskie about his temper, and he lost his temper." So he definitely he admitted himself he had a temper, but he was working hard to keep it in check. And after a flare up. He would just cool right off and go on as if nothing had happened.
And he was a physically imposing man, very tall. So losing his temper was probably not something you wanted to be a part of.
I believe that I read something about, and I'm saying I believe because I may get the wrong person here, it was George Mitchell or someone was a victim of... one of Muskie's explosions, and he said he was sitting in a chair when Muskie blew up, and his knees were still shaking even though he was sitting in a chair. So I guess the outburst could be pretty volatile but short-lived.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. We will also hear some more from Ed Muskie himself. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Baxter Brewing Company in Lewiston, committed to 100% wind-powered beer production, baxterbrewing.com, by RM Davis, Inc., providing investment management, trust services, and financial counsel to generations of clients throughout New England, rmdavis.com, and by Maine Spine Surgery, a Mercy practice focused on spine surgery, led by surgeons Lee Thibodeau and John Wallig. That's the story of Mercy.
An infectious disease that won't let go.
I'm not going to win this battle because this thing's slowly eating me up.
Tuberculosis attacks vulnerable lungs and vulnerable populations. Frontline looks at how TB maintains its hold on humanity. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Tune in for The Takeaway this evening at midnight. MPBN is a media partner of this year's Maine Jewish Film Festival, which is underway and runs through Saturday, March 29th. The festival organizers present a program of films that explore the Jewish experience through features, documentaries, and shorts. This year, films will be shown at numerous venues in Portland, as well as in locations in Waterville, Brunswick, Rockland, Bangor, and Augusta. While many film showings are free, MPBN members receive a 15% off discount on the ticketed shows. Just print out the coupon on our website, mpbn.net, where you can also find more information about the Maine Jewish Film Festival schedule and the MPBN member discount. Just click on events at mpbn.net.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, remembering Edmund Muskie. With me in the studio, Pat Weber, director of the Muskie Archives and Special Collections Library at Bates College, and Jim Witherell, author of Ed Muskie, Made in Maine. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'd especially love to hear from you if you knew Ed Muskie and have a good story to tell. Before we go to our calls, though, we're going to hear Muskie's voice again. This is from a documentary MPBN produced in 1981. The host and interviewer of the documentary, ironically, was a now Senator Angus King, who worked at MPBN back then. So this is Edmund Muskie talking to Angus King in 1981.
But ideas still are at the heart of it, and ideas that come from the grassroots, because that's where the first auguries of change are likely to come. If you've got a caucus organization active in both parties, close, to the people who have problems, the farmers who can't get a decent price, laborers, who aren't adequately represented and who live in a work environment dominated by management, whatever it is, if your political organization is based at the local caucus level, there is a place for those ideas to begin to surface from the people who have problems.
Edmund Muskie speaking in 1981. Our first caller today is someone who knew Edmund Muskie and somebody you may have heard of. Elliot Cutler is on the line with us, a gubernatorial candidate. Elliot, how old were you when you worked for Senator Muskie, and what did you do in his office?
Hi, Jennifer, Pat, Jim. How old was I? Well, I started as an intern after my junior year in college. So I would have been about 20 or 21. And then I worked for him for about 7 years after that. So it was a long haul.
What do you want people to know about him, especially people who may not remember him, the young people in Maine?
Well, the most extraordinary thing about Muskie was his ability to build consensus around legislative ideas, around great purpose. He was a partisan Democrat, no question about it. But he passed huge legislation, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, laws that have had enormous impacts on people's lives for 40, almost going on 50 years. And he did it with barely a dissenting vote. And his principal collaborators, the people he cooperated with most closely in his committee, I worked on the Clean Air Act with him, I worked on the Clean Water Act with him, and we worked side by side with Republicans. His closest collaborator of all was the senator from Tennessee, Howard Baker, who was a Republican, who later became the majority leader in the U.S. Senate, and Ronald Reagan's chief of staff. The two of them worked together, and Muskie was enormously skilled at finding the common ground among Republicans and Democrats on his committee, and he had a wide variety of people, ranging from people more liberal and aggressive than he to people who were among the most conservative members of the U.S. Senate at the time. He was an extraordinary collaborator.
We hear a lot about the accomplishment, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act. Was there any great disappointment during his years as U.S. Senator? Anything he really wished he could have passed or gotten some more backing for that he was not able to?
It's an interesting question, Jennifer. I don't recall any. He really focused on things he could achieve. I mean, I think his greatest disappointment, quite obviously, was not winning the presidency in 1972. He didn't tilt at windmills. He worked on legislative proposals, whether it was the Clean Air Act or the Clean Water Act or the Budget Act, which remains, I think, one of his signal accomplishments. The War Powers Resolution, these were achievable pieces of legislation that were important, and he worked on them for months and even years.
Were you ever at the other end of that famous temper?
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness, yes. More often than I can remember. In fact, when I was just listening, I was listening to his voice again. I haven't heard his voice for years. And it brings back a lot of memories. I was his scheduler. I took a leave from the Senate staff, and I was his scheduler in the 1972 campaign for about a year and a half. And Musk used to guard himself in his time as much as he could, and he whenever he got really fed up, he'd yell out, you know, "Where's my white space?" He needed time to think, and when you know we were trying to get him elected president, so we didn't give him much time to think. I was the object of his temper probably as much or more at the time than anyone else on the staff, because I was responsible for chewing up his time.
Finally, Elliot Cutler, before we let you go, is there anything that people don't know about Edmund Muskie that you think is important for them to know? Anything that's sort of been the history is brushed under the rug?
The most important thing to understand about Muskie, apart from his extraordinary wisdom and integrity, really was what we've just been talking about, were his skills as a legislator. He, I think, deserves to be remembered as probably one of the half dozen greatest legislators in that century, in the 20th century. He was an amazingly accomplished legislator who focused on important stuff and got it done. We all of us in Maine should be proud of the fact that he came from this great state.
Well, Elliot Cutler, thanks so much for calling in as we remember Edmund Muskie's 100th birthday.
Good to talk with you, Jennifer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So headed now to Dick in Old Town. Hi, Dick. Go ahead.
Muskie,
Dick, go ahead. I'm sorry, Dick. I clicked the wrong button. Start over, please.
Sure. Muskie was a great promoter of the Dickie Lincoln School hydroelectric project in northern Maine, where you turn the Upper St. John into a reservoir, and it would have been a wonderful thing if he'd been able to pull it off, because it would work beautifully with the wind turbines, because hydroelectric power is a very elegant resource in terms of its ability to respond to electric demands. My bill is the big objection to it that Muskie could never overcome. We're from environmentalists and fishermen and all the rest of it. Well, I did a radio show with Bill Legere, and in which I said that this objections to the Dickie Lincoln School project are based on environmental fishing and so on. I said, you've got to look at the effect that would have on the integrity of the electrical grid in Maine. And I went on at some length on that. Muskie evidently heard that. He wrote to the MPBN radio station and got a copy of the transcript and read the transcript of my radio show into the congressional record. And the first sentence in his introduction of that transcript was, "I share Professor Hill's frustrations." So that if you anybody now that wants to look at the into the Dickie Lincoln School hydroelectric project, if you Google it, the first hit you get is the Bates document, which they have archived that speech in the congressional record where I interviewed Bill Legere on the appropriateness of the Dickie Lincoln School hydroelectric project.
Well, Dick, thanks so much for calling in. And the man who was made that part of the archive is sitting right in front of me. Do you remember that one specifically?
Not that one specifically. There are a lot of documents in Muskie's papers, but that is part of our archives, and sort of an annotation of everything Muskie ever did or said in the congressional record done by one of his former staffers.
All right. So, thanks for calling, Dick. Going to Chris in Wells. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead, Chris.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. My father went to college with Ed Muskie, and they remained friends all their lives. And a group of their friends got together and had a tournament every year. And the winner got to keep the cribbage board for a year until the next tournament. And the only time I ever heard Ed Muskie get upset was playing cribbage. But I was wondering if those cribbage boards are still around.
Do you know the answer, Pat?
I don't, but I can make a note and look them up for you. There's a good chance. We ended up receiving probably pretty much everything out of his offices and his homes, sort of short of personal effects. And even then, I think some things did come to the archives that you have to scratch your head and wonder. probably someone said, pack up my office and take it to the archives, and they packed up everything, including the rugs and the wall hangings. So if he ended up with the cribbage board, there's a good chance that we have it.
All right. Thanks for calling, Chris. Going to Barbara in Portland. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, this is Barbara Fraumini. I'm a professor of public policy at the Muskie School of Public Service, and I teach in the Public Policy and Management Master's Program. As of Friday, because of two retirements and two tenured faculty terminations, the number of faculty teaching full-time in the PPM program has dropped from 5 to 1. PPM is the largest graduate program in the Muskie School. We were able to teach 24 courses per academic year. Now, including some who teach just a few courses, our ability to teach has been reduced to about 8 courses per year. And that's why I call Friday's action a de facto elimination of the program. So there's an irony, is that this action just predates Muskie's 100th birthday. Also, USM has declared it wants to be a metropolitan university with strong connections to the community. Given Muskie School's dedication to public service, this action is contrary to the stated goals of USM as a metropolitan university.
Barbara, I really understand your anger and frustration. We're looking at Muskie's 100th birthday. Did you know Edmund Muskie, or do you have a thought about his legacy?
No, I did not, but certainly one of his legacies is the Muskie School. That's why it's named so.
Is it named for him, or was he part of the creation of the school? Do you know?
It was named for him with his permission.
All right. Well, thank you for calling today. Going to Ginger in Monmouth. Go ahead, Ginger.
Yes. I used to work for the senator on campaigns, both in paid positions and in volunteer positions. And one of the important pieces of his legacy is that he was by many considered a key person in re-energizing the Democratic Party in Maine. And I'm wondering if any of your guests can speak more to that.
Oh, absolutely. It probably all started when Muskie returned from the Navy, serving in the Navy in World War II. He and other men and women came back to Maine and had seen other places around the country and around the world where there was a real two-party system. And he just decided, he even said, it wasn't necessarily that he was a Democrat. He said, if I lived down south, I'd probably be a Republican because somebody would have to do pretty much the same thing down there at the time. But he saw a real need, and he and just a handful of other primary people, Frank Coffin, Don Nickel, and Dick McMahon was his campaign manager. It drove him probably 20,000 miles around the state. As Pat mentioned earlier, Ed Muskie had met a lot of people during his time at the Office of Price Stabilization during the Korean conflict. And that helped him. Even the businesses he dealt with saw him as a very fair and reasonable man. And by the time he won the surprise election, had the surprising victory in 1954, and was elected by such a large margin in 1956. Back then, the term of governor was 2 years. His wife Jane said it was because he had probably met every person in the state, and so you can credit the turnaround to a small core of people, and of course the hundreds of volunteers and campaign workers like yourself and many others.
All right, Ginger, thanks so much for calling. Going to Rich in Rockland. Hi, Rich, you're on Maine Calling.
Hi, how are you? I was a long life Ed Muskie supporter. However, had an interesting experience with him. I was president of a service organization in the Midcoast Maine area, and I had the pleasure of introducing him at our meeting, and he was then Secretary of State. And we made it very emphatic to him that he was coming there to talk about a particular world situation. But, it was also a political year.
and Ed was as a great politician, we really emphasized this, that let's talk about the let's talk about the world situation, no politics. But Ed is a very articulate, and it was just very humorous. He was able to get some good political information into the speech because he's so eloquent. And we all chuckled about it because it was a highly, highly Republican organization at that time. I don't know if you know anything about the history of Rockland, but probably back then was much more Republican. So anyway, it was kind of funny, but he was just a great speaker, and we enjoyed it tremendously. But I had to chuckle when I had that opportunity. So anyway, that's my story.
Thanks so much for calling in with it. And you all aren't surprised at all.
No, it reminds me of the story about during the 1954 campaign. Ed was just running, I have to note, because nobody else wanted to. They had asked a lot of people to run for governor, and they all declined, and Ed said, oh hell, I'll do it. And it was supposed to be a dry run for 1956. Frank Coffin was supposed to run for governor and win. This was just to get the party up and running. It reminds me of the time that he went to Rangeley to speak. He was supposed to talk about fish stocking or something and give your typical political speech. This was June or July of 1954. And he visited his father in Rumford on the way to Rangeley and got to thinking about the time they went fishing up at Four Ponds just south of Rangeley. And it brought back all kinds of feelings. And he just threw his speech away and I cover in quite a bit of detail in the book that this was when he stopped being a capable public speaker and became like an eloquent orator. He said, there's a quote from Dick McMahon who drove him all over the state that year. Dick McMahon said, I was sitting in the back and just moved to tears. He said, of course, I'm a sentimental SOB, but still, he had everybody was just riveted on him. They came expecting a typical campaign speech, and he just went off on his own. And that, according to all accounts, was the beginning of Muskie as a very, well, a great public speaker.
Well, we're going to go to another break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions and more from Edmund Muskie. Please stay with us.
Broadcast Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Northeast Delta Dental, administering dental benefits for businesses of all size in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Details online at nedelta.com. By Revision Energy, working with Mainers to reduce fossil fuel use with the installation of solar panels, revisionenergy.com/MPBN. And by CEI, flexible financing for businesses that create Maine jobs, CEIMaine.org, capital for opportunity and change.
Throughout the world, we're seeing harsher, more frequent and punishing storms, floods, and droughts.
The storms are getting more intense. 100 years ago, it was very rare for us to get a 4-inch rainstorm in a single day. Now it's not uncommon at all.
How do we defend people, buildings, and infrastructure from devastation?
Join us for Adapting to Climate Change from IEEE Spectrum.
You can join us for that in about 20 minutes at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling.
On the next Fresh Air, Bob Mankoff, cartoonist and longtime cartoon editor at The New Yorker. He has a new memoir. We'll talk about his life, editing other people's cartoons, and creating his own.
I did a cartoon with a couple in bed, and the guy is saying to the woman, what's your opinion on some sex marriage?
Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, celebrating the 100th birthday of Edmund Muskie. With me in the studio, Jim Witherell, author of Ed Muskie, Made in Maine. Also with me, Pat Weber, director of the Muskie Archives and Special Collections Library at Bates College. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. But before we go to the phones again, we want to play one more piece of sound from a 1981 documentary hosted by Angus King about Edmund Muskie. This is Edmund Muskie talking to Angus King about reflecting on politics.
These very obvious observations I've always made about politics from that first election night in Waterville when I was elected governor the first time, that it is the victor who is always regarded as the expert. Because I won that night, I suddenly became a new political expert, you know, one who knew how to win elections against hopeless odds. Actually, Governor Cross, whom I defeated, may have learned more lessons out of that campaign than I did. But because you win, you're the success, so you're the new seer. Everybody turns to you for the new wisdom. Second thing I've learned is, it doesn't matter how auspiciously your victory is perceived, or how auspicious your start in office, or how glittering your promises, or how enthusiastically they're welcomed. They'll be forgotten the next election day.
So what have you done?
Unless the consequences of those new policies are seen as by the electorate as being in their interest. And then they have to account for it. So the two important words out of three, there are three important words in politics: victory, consequences, and accountability. The two most important ones are the last two. The consequences of what you do when you're elected with your victory, and the fact that you'll be held accountable for those consequences, good or bad.
And if they... And that was Edmund Muskie speaking in 1981 to Angus King. We have an email from Ann. Please remember that George Mitchell was his aide. He was very instrumental in the establishment of the Campobello International Park. Going to Tom in Scarborough. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, I'd like to respond to Elliot Cutler and also to that Angus King piece. The most important legacy, other than clean water from Ed Muskie, is the Democratic Party in Maine. And the fact that Angus King asked Ed Muskie in that 1981 interview whether or not he thought that a person could go outside the Democratic Party process for the same principles, Muskie responded directly by saying that they could, but that it would not have long-term consequences, that it would not have the ability to have policy decisions over time that would change the quality of Mainers' lives. So when we have Elliot Cutler come in and try and pimp using Ed Muskie as a foil for his own well-being is so short-sighted and it's so exploitive that I just had to respond. The Democratic Party is an institution that has legs. The Clean Water Act only is around now because Democrats, after Muskie left, continued to support those policies. It wasn't a flash in the pan, getting something done, and then patting yourself on the back. It's a process of long-term social change, and that's what Muskie really, that's the legacy, and that's why he is a gift for the ages.
Well, Tom, thanks so much for calling. And one thing I want to mention is that documentary that we dug out of the archives, we're going to figure out a way to post that online. Our web expert is working on that right now. So as soon as that's online, we're going to put a link on our Maine Calling Facebook page. So MPBN Maine Calling, check the Facebook page later today. And if you're interested in watching that 1981 documentary with Angus King interviewing Edmund Muskie, it will be there online for all of us to watch the interview and our own time. So we're going to go now to Ann in... Ann, are you in Wiscasset?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
I wanted to tell you that I was a freshman at Colby College in the fall of 1968. And there was a paper mill on the Mezolonsky River more than 2 miles away from the campus. It was a joke on campus that we could tell what color they were dyeing the toilet paper by the color of the river. And when they changed the pulp, the campus smelled like rotten tuna fish. This was quite an experience for a person who lived in the Midwest. When I was a sophomore in 69 and 70, the kids were shot at Kent State. And Edmund Muskie came to Colby College campus and spoke in front of the library. There were an awful lot of folks my classmates piled on the lawn in front of the library. What impressed me was the calming that took place during his speech of a very agitated group of folks, my classmates. It was later on that year that I heard of him sponsoring the clean air, the clean water here in America. And when I moved back to the Midwest, and I now live here in Maine, to my joy and delight, I watched the Clean Water Act go into effect. And every time now that I drive up to Wiscasset, or drive up to Waterville, and drive past the Mezolonsky, and recognize that there is no dye in the water and no stink in the air, I remembered of the day that he came to the campus and calmed between 800 and 1,000 kids that were ready to raise hell.
Well, Anne, I really appreciate you calling in with your story. Thank you so much. Going now to Steve and Wayne. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi. I just have a couple of personal comments. I agree with the previous caller. I grew up in Bethel and witnessed the Androscoggin as a child, as a dirty river, and the smells from the paper company were on my mind all the time. And to see the Clean Water Act be passed and to canoe down that river as a later adult is truly miraculous. Muskie, I first met Muskie as a 12-year-old in the living room of my parents' house. They were rabid Democrats and were campaigning for him as governor. And I guess my impression of him was very similar to my impressions of Kennedy as a teenager, when I became a teenager. It's just too bad he didn't become, he didn't go further politically, because I think he would have done the same that Kennedy did for young people. He would have inspired the nation, because he was a very, very powerful figure and meant a great deal to us. And I think we're, as Mainers, we have an incredible array of politicians who have done well by us in similar ways. I have a film of Muskie presenting a check to my father and a couple other people from Bethel to help start the Sunday River ski area, which my father was instrumental in. And I wondered if that film is in the archives or whether you'd be interested in getting a hold of it. He's speaking in it, so it's a talking 8mm film.
Pat?
If it's not in the archives, we would certainly love to have it. You can go to our website and look up our contact information, and feel free to send me an email or give me a call, and we can talk about that. I wanted to say two things from the last two callers. The archives are full of correspondence from people not just across Maine but across the country who sent him letters about environmental issues, about what was happening in their hometowns, to their rivers, to their shorelines. Mm-hmm. One woman, I think from Ohio, actually sent him an envelope full of soot that she collected from her house, because that was being deposited around her house from a local factory. And the other thing about engaging youth, there's the famous incident during the 68 campaign with Humphrey, where he was speaking at Washington and Jefferson University and was being heckled by college students, and had been heckled repeatedly by college students across the tour, the campaign tour that they were making. And he stopped and said, "I'll give one of you 10 minutes to come up here and talk and say whatever you want, but the bargain is that you have to listen to me talk for 10 minutes. And so they talked among themselves, and they picked somebody, and you can go to YouTube, you can go find this in various places. The video of the student goes up there and starts off sensibly, but then quickly sort of deteriorates into a rant about, you know, don't vote for anybody, and the system's working against us, and, you know, we don't like anybody. And then Muskie took his 10 minutes, and instead of talking about these are the issues that you need to vote, why you need to support us, talked about why you need to be involved and why what your voice is important and why you need to be part of the system, to be engaged in that for the rest of your lives, and actually received a standing ovation from the students when he was finished.
Mm-hmm. Jim Witherell.
Mm-hmm. And also, getting back to both of the last two callers, One I remember hearing more than once about the calming. I've talked about the calming, reasonable effect of his voice, referring to the talk he gave at Colby. But having been born in Rumford and having played high school football, practicing at Hosmer Field right across the road from the mill in August in the late 60s and early 70s was quite an experience. And I know for I can tell you firsthand how bad the pollution was. And some of Muskie's friends, Vito Puglia, who was the town's cobbler, said when the ceiling was low, you just want to shut your windows and stay inside. But it was the town's bread and butter. It was a double-edged sword. Without the mill, without that smell, that there wouldn't have been anything in Rumford. Of course, it's a lot better now, thanks to Ed Muskie. But even where he lived, upriver, up above the falls, the river was still polluted from the paper mills in Berlin and Gorham, New Hampshire, even when Ed Muskie was a teenager.
I think we have time for one more call. Martha, go ahead. Martha, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, hello. Thank you for this opportunity. My memory is brief, and it involves Campobello Island, and I thank the previous caller for speaking of the Campobello International Park. Young woman camping on Campobello Island, going to a church on Sunday, and coming out and seeing Ed Muskie as Secretary of State with the Secret Service around him, and being left with the impression that he was a very spiritual person, a gentleman who could have disappeared into this small, tiny island and did not. And my regret really is that I was not brave enough at the time to approach him and shake his hand. But it was I always have remembered that there he was when he could have been very anonymous.
Well, Martha, thank you for that final memory for our program talking about Edmund Muskie. And Pat and Jim, thank you both for joining us today. Pat Weber is director of the Muskie Archives and Special Collections Library at Bates College. Jim Witherall is author of Ed Muskie, Made in Maine. It is not out yet. Will be out next month. So look out for Jim Witherall's book, his biography, Ed Muskie, Maine in Maine. Today's program produced by Jonathan Smith. Jonathan Woodward ran the board. Nick Woodward provided us with those wonderful audio clips from 1981. And again, keep a lookout to MPBN's Maine Calling Facebook page, where we're going to try to provide a link to that film. We had additional help from John Keimel and the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Tomorrow on the program, the latest science on keeping your heart healthy. And don't forget, this Thursday marks the return of the Maine Calling Book Club. We would discuss Monica Wood's memoir, When We Were the Kennedys. You still have time to read it. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.